Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Hello, world. Good evening. This is Pamela Elaine Lockridge. I'll be your host tonight for the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show, sponsored by NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. Our website is naasca.org. This is scan number 2713. Tonight is Wednesday special guest night. Our guest is Diana Bella Rose from Los Angeles, California. But before we bring her on, my co-host Penelope is here tonight. How are you doing, Penelope?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Pamela?
I'm doing great. I'm going to go check and see who this panelist is calling in. And would you give the mission statement for NASCA, please, and the phone number?
I'd love to. Thank you. So if you're streaming in and you are considering calling in and being a member of our panel, I would strongly encourage you to do so. Pamela or myself will welcome you in on the back line and welcome you into the show. The number to do that, all you have to do is dial the number 646-595-2118. Again, that's area code 646-595-2118. And I want to tell you a little bit about the National Association for Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. As you know, NASCA is all about child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA. It's to address issues related to related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, traumas and neglect, and we do so with two goals. The first, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And the second, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, such as this show, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested and the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Again, I would strongly encourage you to call in if you'd like to be a member of our panel and have an opportunity to ask our special guest, Diana, a question or a comment related to her story. This is her night. The number to do that is area code 646-595-2118. Thank you, Pamela.
Thank you, Penelope. So we encourage callers to call in and be part of the panel to support our special guest tonight, as Penelope said. So I'm going to bring on our guest. Her name is Diana, and I believe that's her name. Hi, Diana.
Hi, how are you guys? Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for being here and telling your story. We're so happy that you got the courage to do that. So is your name Diana or Deanna?
It's Diana, like Diana, the Princess of Wales. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. So it says here that you're originally from Sofia, Bulgaria.
Yes. Born and raised there.
How long did you live there?
since 1998.
Okay. And when did you come to the States? How old were you?
I was 22. For the first time, I came in 1992. And I lived in Seattle, Washington. I stayed here for 3 months, and then I got back to Bulgaria because we weren't ready to live here in the United States, but we were thinking of coming back. So that's how we came back to the States. My father invited us and his wife. So that's
okay.
Why, yeah, we came here.
Okay. Well, let me tell you a little bit about how the show goes. Penelope, you're good at this. Tell her how the segment goes. Do you mind?
I don't mind at all. Thank you for saying that. Sometimes I think I'm a little bit too long-winded, but I'll try to be succinct and explain. So we structure these special destiny shows into segments. These are our blogs.
Penelope?
Our members. Yes.
Penelope, you're cutting out. Your phone's cutting
okay.
out.
Let me see. Am I in a better location now?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that. Consistently in three segments because they are archived, and we have listeners and members of NASCA go back and listen to these shows, and they are really they really help so many people. So what you're doing tonight is really helping so many people. And so we like to start and we look at your life chronologically. So the first segment is from your earliest when you were born, a little bit of background on your family of origin, you have lived already, up until the age of about.
Okay. We're still having communication problems with your phone, Kelsey. I don't know.
Sorry.
I don't know the reason, but that's okay. That's okay. So I'll just take over right now, and maybe we can try your phone in a better place. Yeah, we're going to go three segments. We're going to go to the panel twice. And you start at the earliest years, okay? So, and we'll just guide you through it, Diana. So please talk about, please start off talking about your family of origin, you know, your mom and dad and any siblings you had.
My mom and dad, actually my mom was raised in Sofia, Bulgaria, and my father was raised in Silistra, Bulgaria. My grandmother, she is Italian, half Romanian, and he was raised with his family, and he has about four brothers. And my mom, she has a sister. Her dad died when she was very little. Her sister was two and she was three. So, and my grandmother raised them, both of them. And I was raised by my mother and father, who were really hardworking people. And we used to live with my grandma when my father and mother got married because they didn't have any other place to stay. They were very poor. They were living in a house basically on the ground. You could see from the window people's feet and shoes walking around you. We were living in one room, and we were sharing kitchen with my grandmother and grandfather, and they were living in another room. So it was really small place. And my father, actually, he wasn't very nice person because probably of the way he was raised. He was rejected by his mother because she got married to another man. And you know how sometimes things are when you marry somebody else and they don't accept your children. So he was living in a garage, rented garage. And he was sleeping on the floor on a mattress. And probably that was one of the reasons, and I from the beginning, so we can say things out. I can forgive him for everything what he did to me, I guess. he didn't know better way of raising me, and he was very strict. He wasn't allowing me to go out and with my friends, and he was making me to go to bed at 8 o'clock in the evening, which was really, really bad and very disturbing, and I cried, and I wasn't very happy because of it, and my peers, they were playing outside, I could have heard them, and I was supposed to go to bed, and he was extremely, extremely strict, and he was punishing me without a reason. He was making me eat without me wanting to eat, and otherwise I would have get in trouble. He was punishing me in the corner with my hands behind my body, and it was really, I don't know, it was really disturbing. And when I go back now and think about it, I was really good girl. I was doing everything what my parents were telling me, and I was very bright, and I was very loving, and I loved everybody, but I didn't like the way my father was acting around me and the way he was treating me, my mother, my grandmother, and I'm always finding excuse for him because of the way he was raised. So it was very unpleasant situation, and after we moved to a house, because in a while we moved in a house, my parents were very hardworking, they were making at one point in their life a lot of money. They were he was a waiter, she was a waitress, and they got to the point where they were able to buy a house, so we can move in a new house. And I grew up and I became I became a teenager, and he was again continuing to do this to me. I was very afraid of him. When he was coming back, basically, I was jumping in my bed from work. I didn't want him to know that I'm awake. And he was coming back late, and I was talking to my friends through the door, and they were looking for his car. And the moment they were seeing his car, they were like, oh, you need to go inside. You need to go to bed because your father is coming from work and you can get in trouble. And my mother, she didn't have a lot of, she didn't have the opportunity to defend me or to do something about it. Otherwise, she would have get in trouble. So basically, my childhood wasn't very happy one. As well as when I got into the middle school. And when my parents divorced, I was 13 years old. They didn't get along at all. There were so many things happening in the house, which I didn't like at all. And this was the point where basically I was able to live my life free of his rules and to spend some time with friends and to go and do things I want to do, like somebody who is 14, 15, and it's in middle school. He wasn't allowing me to go to school events if they were late in the evening. He wasn't allowing me to go and see a movie. And I described in one of your interviews you did before you invited me to the show that one time I decided to disobey him, and he wasn't home, and I thought he's not coming back home. When I was coming back from the movie with my friends and I saw him approaching me, and I was so afraid, you have no idea, and everybody knew what is going to happen, and he started spanking me in front of my friends and pushing me and yelling and screaming at me, calling me names. And then in the house, he continued to spank me. He bent me, and that's how he was spanking me. And I couldn't sit on the bottom for quite a while, and I was punished. I wasn't allowed to go anywhere for a month. And it was absolutely, absolutely terrible thing I went through. And basically,
I can hear in your voice the pain and the emotion. And it started before you were sick, right?
Yes.
What was the age of physical abuse started at?
Anyway, I was 4 years old. I was 4 years old and I was four. And that was the time when everything started.
And your mother couldn't help you even though she wanted to, right?
Yeah, exactly. The only thing she was doing is throwing the food in the garbage and hiding it from him. I don't know what was the big deal for me to eat the whole thing. And I think this is totally unacceptable. Everybody should have the right to eat how much they want to eat, you know. And given the circumstances and the thing that I was afraid of him, I think this was understandable to feel that way and not to have enough appetite.
Diana, did he ever beat your mother or, you know, get violent with her? You were not only receiving abuse, but you were witnessing it, right?
Yes.
Tell us about some of the feelings. Tell us about some of the feelings that were happening with you, because he was like terrorizing you, right?
Yeah, he was terrorizing everybody, not only me. He was terrorizing my mother, my grandmother, and he was just a violent person, you know. And I was afraid from him. I was hiding. I was crying. I was very emotional. I was trying to help everybody at home. And I kind of grew up very quickly compared to the other peers I have in my friends and everybody else. So everybody was afraid of him. He was a little bit intimidating and too much. So they knew what he was capable of doing.
So was he a big, tall man, or was he a little guy?
He was a little guy, like Italian type, small guy. But he had a lot of power, and he was very strong physically, and he was a man. So he was able,
okay.
So I couldn't do anything about it. It was really difficult.
Right. Okay, we're going to go to the panel, and I'm going to see who just called in to support you. Well, Penelope's going to go on the back line and see, but we have some people supporting you right now. Did you have any brothers or sisters?
Not at the time. I didn't have any brothers and sisters. My mom was getting pregnant, and she was keep losing the children, and unfortunately.
What happened?
She was keep miscarrying, and so the babies were born. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All righty. Well, I'm going to go to Penelope. And Penelope, you've heard the terror that Diana's gone through with her dad, who you're supposed to want to respect and honor and have a good relationship with, but he seemed to be somebody that wasn't very very good to her.
You know, yes, and I am just. And I know I don't know exactly how to phrase this question. I'm just going to let you know, Diana, that I am also from an ethnic family. And I just don't know if, you know, the if there was a any relation to, you know, some of the standards. Was there any sort of, I think, pattern of behavior that it was established in Bulgaria before your family moved into the United States? You know, did that pattern continue, or was it initiated there? And is there, you know, was there as much emphasis on, you know, child abuse and domestic violence in your, you know, in Bulgaria as there is here? I'm just curious as to, I guess, did the pattern, you know, originate in the United States, or did it originate somewhere else?
The thing is, he got married again. This was one of the reasons he separated from my mom. There was another woman. She didn't know about it. So, and he, I guess he was violent to his other wife also, because these people don't change. And this is one of the reasons I'm working in domestic violence and abuse, and I'm trying to make a difference. And I don't know, I haven't seen him since 2007. And I don't know what's going on with him. And honestly, I don't want, and I know that he's not supporting me and he continues to do things he shouldn't do. But I'm trying to stay away from him. I don't want to get, you know, tangled with him, if you know what I mean. I'm trying to ignore everything. I'm just swallowing everything what he does. And I was afraid to 2007 to tell him something back. You know, I was listening and I was taking all of his verbal disrespect towards me, and I was just, you know, ignoring it. But in 2007, I kind of put myself together and got some courage, and I told him, you know what, I don't want to see you. I don't want to know you. Could you please leave right away? And I don't want you to call me, and I want you to look for me. So that was the reason for me to do that, because he continued to be into my marriage, and he continued to do things he shouldn't do. So, along with his other wife. So, I think this is the best thing to do. When something doesn't work, and you give people several chances in their life, and if they continue the pattern of disrespect, you just decide to discontinue all relationships and all kinds of communications.
Well, absolutely, and that's a decision that we can make as adults, and you know, as children. And I know we're still in the first, like, in your earlier years. I think, you know, we don't really have, which is, I think, the hardest thing. And when in my own healing process, I realized that when you're a young child and you're born into a home where there is abuse, where you're hurt, where you're, you know, you live in fear, and you're born into it. Children are not self-sufficient. We can't make those decisions. You know, we are in these environments. We have to learn how to survive. And that's very, very impactful. Something that we need to work through, obviously, in the healing process years later, because it's, you know, the fear and what happens to us as children, those are our formative and developmental years. And when you are growing up and you're born in a home, as a child, where you just need to survive, your body is, you know, in a state of constant fight or flight, and that is just a very difficult situation to be in as a child. And many of us have already, obviously, you know, been in that situation since we're here. We're adult survivors of child abuse, but we can definitely, you know, relate to that and know how painful that can be. So. I'm just, you know, happy to hear that you know, obviously you're an adult now. You can make those decisions, which I know are not easy, especially with your family. But as a child, it's a very different scenario, and that's really hard. So thank you for sharing that everything with me, by the
you're
way.
Welcome.
And Pamela,
thank
I will
you.
Turn it back to you.
Thank you, Penelope. Thank you, Diana, for answering and making any comments and letting us know that, you know, that you are a survivor. We're so grateful that and applaud you for surviving and coming to share your story with other survivors to let them know that it's possible and that there is hope for healing, because I see later on in your bio that you've done some things as far as healing. You've got quite a panel tonight of people supporting you, so I'd like to bring Tanisha on to talk to you if she Tanisha?
Hey, I just want to say stay strong and be encouraged. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
Thank you, Tanish.
Yeah, I just want to say stay strong and be encouraged, and I'm here to support you, and we'll continue to support you in any way I can. And I'm sorry that you endured all that you endured, but you came out on the other side, and now you have your story and your testimony, and just to continue to share and tell your story.
Thank you so much, Tanisha. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to go to Jessica from Maine. Jessica, you're on with Tanisha. Jessica, can you hear me? Jessica, it's Pamela hosting the NASCA special guest show. Hello? I can barely hear you. Hold on.
I'm so sorry. I'm in my car. Let me try and get it on the...
Okay. I knew you were there.
Here, can you hear me better now?
Yes, much better. You're on with
Diana. Okay. Oh, my gosh, everyone on the radio heard me fuffling around like that. I'm so embarrassed. I just wanted to call and give my support. Thank you, Pamela. I just wanted to call and give my support. I, too, am a survivor of abuse at the hands of my father. And I, too, was drawn to helping other people. I went to law school and became a criminal prosecutor thinking that I could maybe save everyone from their father, since I couldn't save my father, you know, myself from my own father. Long story short, I went to therapy, trauma therapy, by way of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I developed a drinking problem like many of us do. Anyway, I went to a trauma place, and I went away for 6 weeks, and I realized why I was so resistant to looking at that pussy sore that I had that I didn't want to peek under. I really had to go through all of the emotions and deal with what my father had done to me. And I learned that those of us who, you know, want to help other people, many times, you know, it's hard to accept that any child gets abused. But most people, like, that's so horrifying to imagine, but they don't understand when you have to love your abuser, what kind of damage that has to do to you. And I learned in therapy that babies who have abusive parents have to make a choice, because it would break the child's ego to make a decision. I must be bad if my nurturing caretaker, where I get my food, is bad. They can't be bad, so therefore I must be bad. And so that's why I learned that no matter how high I had achieved stuff, I was still felt so empty inside. So anyway, I just wanted to share that healing is possible, and I'm here to support you, and thank you so much for sharing your story. You're not alone. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Carly. Thank you for the support.
Thank you so much, Jessica. Your words are very insightful. Thank you. We're going to Deborah in Arizona. You're on with Diana, our special guest.
I am already just so impressed with the bravery that you have to say things out loud. And you know, everybody here in NASCA understands how hard it is to say it out loud for the first time, the second time, the third time. Every time you talk about it, it still opens up those wounds. My question to you is, how are you dealing with, every time you open up that you have to deal with those wounds, how do you deal with that, and how do you cope with it?
you know what, since my father is no longer part of my life, and I haven't seen him since 2007, this is almost 14 years, right? So I healed completely. I went through all the feelings. I honored my feelings. I honor what happened. And as I said in the beginning of the show, I'm forgiving him for the sake of me, so I can move on with my life. And, of course, I became stronger, and this helped me a lot. And I'm trying not to go to my memories, not to go what happened to me back. And this helps a lot. This helped me heal, and this helped me be more reliant on myself. And I live alone, and I do a lot of things. And I'm so happy. My mind is occupied with all the things. Yeah, I'm doing.
And let me interrupt you real quick. And I don't mean to, but when you said that you decided that you had no more questions for your father when he acknowledged what he did to you, and you decided not to think about it anymore, how does somebody do that?
You just forgive, and you just say, hey, I told you in the beginning, you know, he was doing that because he didn't know better, I guess. He was angry at his parents. He was angry because of the way they raised him, I guess. And I'm just using understanding towards what he did. And there is nothing good coming if you continue to hold grudge towards this person. And you just say, yeah, I forgive you. Whatever you do, whatever you say, just not touching me. And I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry you're doing that. And what you're doing is because of you. You're not doing because of me. So that's how
that's
it is,
a very good statement. Thank you so much for that. Thank you so much. And thank you for my time. Thank you. That was beautiful.
Absolutely. Happy to help. Thank you for calling. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Deborah. And that was a great question. Great question. I'm going to go down to Mary Ellen in New York. Okay, Mary Ellen, you're on with Diana, who's all the way at the other end of the West Coast, and you're in the East Coast. So,
wow.
All the way
at well. Welcome, Diana. I'm happy to be
hi.
Yes, all the way across. I'm happy to be here tonight. I'm thankful that you are opening up to share with us tonight. It's always a privilege to be on the panel and have someone share their story because it is so personal. So I really take that as a blessing when I'm able to be present and share that with, you know, someone who's surviving the traumas of their life and coming beyond them. So I thank you, and good luck with the rest of your show.
Thank you so much for calling. Have a wonderful evening.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. All our panelists tonight are just beautiful people, beautiful hearts, and such support. I just can't commend them. And I just thank you, Diana, that they're here for you. I mean, I just am so thrilled that they're here for you. But, you know, going to the question of how do you forget and leave it behind you, you know, I just told myself I'm not going to give my monster one more second of my life. This is my adult life, and I'm not giving them any more time and space in my head, you know, and that they're going to meet their maker and they're going to stand before them for what they did to me, and I can lay my head on a pillow, you know, and sleep peacefully because, you know, I know I've done wrong and I acknowledge that and I try to make amends, but people that, you know, won't do that and just continue their abuse. You have to get away from these toxic people. And it sounds like to me you were talking to Penelope and telling her your dad was continuing to be toxic in your life. So when did you get away from your abuser? At what age?
Well, I was 13 years old, and I told my mom, you know what, we had enough of it. The things were going really bad, and there was another woman in his life, which is her. Right now she's his wife. And the thing is, we needed to get rid of him because the things couldn't continue that way. And this was my age. It was 13 years old, and this was the best decision I have ever made, and for my mom also, because she didn't have the strength. She was feeling very weak, very alone, like every woman in abusive and domestic violence relationship. They don't have the power. Their personal power is taken away from them, and this was the time, actually, when we started to live like a normal people in normal environment and build life for ourselves and live a life we should live in peace and
right.
quiet and, yeah, and do normal things like other people. And we don't have to put away constant fights. This is not a boxing ring, for God's sake. So this was the most wonderful time. Yeah.
So you were 13 when your mother divorced him? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I was basically celebrating. Yeah, because
yeah.
I couldn't handle
it.
So
where did y'all go?
Yeah.
Where did your mother and you go to find a...
We left in the house, and the house was given to my mom because of me. There was a court date, which was very unpleasant because I had to meet my father face to face, and he wasn't very nice to me, of course. And I had to be a witness in front of judge, and I had to answer questions. And I told the judge what had been going on in the house. And the house was given to my mom and me. So she was working, and she was fully capable to take care of everything. And, of course, he wasn't agreed to pay my child support. Like, this is very often when the father is refusing to pay the child support. And I wasn't surprised. And this was the... That's how we were living, waiting for him to help us, but he wasn't helping us. He wasn't doing anything, and we had to go to court again, and the court was supposed to do something about it, but he continued not to pay my child support. And when he was seeing me, it was usually to find out what my mom is doing and asking me questions he shouldn't ask me. And it was just unpleasant meetings with him, and he was manipulating me, and he wasn't honest with me, and I didn't like it at all. I really wanted my dad in my life. And you love your dad. It doesn't matter what he does to you. You know, you are he's your dad, and you are trying to build a relationship based on love. And I guess he never had the love I was looking for me, because, one, he wasn't probably capable of giving love, or he never loved me. I don't know what
right.
was the reason behind it. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. So it continued in my adulthood. And I still would love to have a loving father in my life, especially now. I would love to have the support I need, and I still don't have it. And I was doing my best, and I was staying in connection with his other wife, and I was trying to do my best, but it wasn't enough. The only thing I was receiving is just disrespect, abusive language, and everything what nobody wants to experience. And it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. I guess this is who he is.
Right. Right. I mean, you had so much to heal from already. You didn't want him to continue to pull you down and pull you down into, you know, you can't really respect yourself when you're allowing others to disrespect you. You know, it's like a dichotomy, you know. You can't have it both ways. If you want to love and respect yourself, you have to get rid of toxic people in your life, and you have to let it go and stop ruminating it about it and mulling it over and over again, and you know, just totally cut it out of your life, whatever it takes, any kind of distractions, just continue with the distractions. Let's go back down to the panel again. We'll go to Penelope. Penelope, I know her story, and she's lived a quite similar life with her dad. So, Penelope, would you speak with Diana about that and how you got to stop, you know, stopped the abuse in your life?
Absolutely. Thank you, Pamela. And Diana, oh, yes, as you're speaking, saying those words, you know, and my heart really just got tight about your father and about just, you know, having to find a way to, you know, move forward without, you know, knowing that that type of love and nurturing was not going to happen from your father. And I totally, our experience may be a little bit different, but man, that feeling is like so strong. I totally can relate to that and resonate with that. And it's hard. And for me, I had to learn how to reparent myself. I think it's really hard when you don't get what you need and in terms of that nurturing in your really young, early years, and if that abuse continues through your lifetime. And I realized my father abused me until the day that he died because I was just stuck in a pattern that I was totally unaware of. But I had to learn how to give myself that love that I never received from him, and I never would because he passed away. So reparenting myself was one. And not allowing memories, like Pamela had just said, to come back into my mind. You know, I had to just choose to look ahead and look forward and not to give those memories any weight. And also just to tell myself it was okay. And, of course, my father's gone dead, so it was easier to say, you know what, I can live a life with more peace now that he's no longer in it. And giving myself permission to say that and let that go was also another part of it. And it sounds like you've done that while your father's alive. You've just said, I've got to just let it go.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, you cannot force things on people. You cannot force them to love you. You cannot force them to be fair with you. And I guess if he wanted to need to be part of his life, he could have come and say, hey, I did this, I did the best as what I could, but it looks like he doesn't love me. That's my conclusion, you know, at the end. And of course, it has something to do with his second wife. She never left my family or my life, and she was always in my family, even fueling, you know, this negativity and this treatment towards me, my family. And it's really sad. It's really sad. But my father is actually responsible for that, because if you want to do something nice for your daughter, if you love your daughter, you should never listen to anybody, what they say, what they do, or what they make you do. He did a lot of things he shouldn't do. We got deported because of him. He deported us back to Bulgaria, which ruined partially my family. He paid the corrupted immigration officers money. So they arrested my husband. They put him in jail. and eventually we end up in Bulgaria. Then we had to basically beg him so we can come back here to the States, and this is totally unacceptable. So I swallowed a lot of the things he did to me, to my family, a lot of pain. He inflicted more and more pain into my life, and from what I found out, he's the reason basically for my husband to, he treated me very bad before I moved to Los Angeles, and from what I found out from friends, he was one of the reasons for teaching him how to treat me, because he became impossible. He became a total copy of him, and he planted a lot of disrespect in him towards me. So it looks like it's really shameful to have a father like this in your life. And I just don't see space for him in my life. I just don't want to think about it. And I don't want to feel depressed, and I don't want to feel the pain anymore. And I just want him to stay away from me. That's what I'm thinking right now. And as I said, the things he do, he even goes online, talks to people, tells them that I'm ugly, and I shouldn't be in Los Angeles, and people are sharing these things with me, which is, I don't know, I guess he's just a horrible person. Sad to say, bad to say, he's a horrible person. And I'm ashamed of having a parent like this. Yeah, it's really, 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 really bad. But I'm not going to give him my personal power. I'm not going to allow him to get to me again. And I'm sorry, he's that kind of person. I don't have any power over his behavior.
I think somebody agrees with that in the background. But absolutely. Absolutely. And clearly you've made that, I mean, you're obviously here and you're doing the work that you're doing. You're on the show right now, speaking your truth and helping other people, and you're nothing like him. You know, that his legacy is, you know, has not been imprinted on you, and that's very obvious. So,
no,
I mean,
I'm not going to allow it. I'm not going to allow it, and I don't have any power over anybody, what they say to me, what they do to me, and they do it because of who they are, and that's it. That's my philosophy, and that's how I look at things, and that's why I'm not giving any emotions, because basically I'm helpless in this situation.
Thank you, Penelope.
Well,
Diana,
thank you, Pamela.
Is that your puppy dog? Yeah. Diana,
yeah, my
dog.
Yeah, he's yelling and screaming. I have a window here, and I have a little place where dogs play, and he's very, very active. Oh, dog is 14. He's very active.
Okay.
Here it is. He stopped.
All right. Okay.
I'm sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. You know, didn't want it to be recorded on your show. So I'm going to go down to Tanisha, Mississippi. Tanisha, you're on with Diana. If you want to make a comment or anything about the second segment of the show.
Just keep doing what you do, Diana. I applaud you. I'm a survivor, too, of abuse, but not of my father, but I can relate to everything that you're saying, and to just hear the strength in your voice is just phenomenal, and you're helping me. It's just thank you.
Thank you,
Tanisha. Yeah, I can hear you, Tanisha. Sorry about that. Thank you for calling. Yeah, it's really difficult when you deal with parents like this, and but the only thing you need to do is put yourself together and say, hey, it's them or it's him or it's her. It's not us. And forgive them and try to live your life. And this is the best thing to do. Otherwise, what is the point to be sad, to be lonely, and to try to make somebody something they're not gonna, you
right.
know, do for you. You cannot make people love you, right?
No. I wouldn't want that kind of love. If I had to make somebody love me, I wouldn't want that. That wouldn't be love. It's making them be a robot. I'm going to go down
yeah.
to Deborah before I do. Yeah. I want to go to Deborah, but right before I do, I wanted to mention, Diana, you know, you keep saying forgiveness, and I had to think, you know, forgiveness, forgiveness. You know, what is that? What does that even mean, you know? And what it means to me, and maybe other people have different definitions, it means that I don't let the poison get to me, right? If I don't
exactly.
let go of, yeah, of the animosity, then I am jumping in the same boat with them, and I'm going to eventually become the monster they became because they took in poison and they didn't get rid of the poison. They just continued the poison in, you know, in a generational fashion, like it came down from their parents, they're sending it down to their children. And you, at some point, you know, we're so fortunate to be able to, on this program, to be able to, you know, go ahead and, you know, stop blaming, but living, right? We don't want to hold
exactly.
on to, yeah, we don't want to hold on to what the monster did. That's not our business, really. You know, we didn't cause it. You know, we're not the catalyst for it. You know, that was their own choice, and we have our own choice to go down and forget it and to have a quality of life. So let me go to Deborah. Bring her on with you again, Diana. Deborah, you're on with
okay.
Diana.
Oh, my goodness. This is such a great program tonight. Number one, I love what we're talking about. And it comes very personal to me at the moment. I love this question of forgiveness and how you can get beyond that. And for me, it becomes a process. And you just don't forgive somebody overnight. There's a process to that. And I wanted to ask you, did you have a process before you forgave anybody at all? Did you have that process? And what was that process consisting of?
You just need to honor your feelings, you know. You need to honor that you're in pain and you're suffering. And you need to go through all of this before actually you're ready to let go. You need to let these feelings go through you. And eventually, slowly and progressively, you get to the point where you become numb and you understand
yeah.
that, yeah, you understand that these people are no longer part of your life. And you are on your own, and the best thing that you can do for yourself, because you love yourself, is
Absolutely.
To stop, yeah, to stop having any interactions with these people.
And there's people that we deal with all the time, and we're here on Ask, and we talk about this all the time, but there's some people who do not understand the beginning processes of forgiving themselves. What would you say for yourself was your beginning process?
For forgiving myself, you mean?
Yeah. Yes.
You know what? I don't have to forgive myself for anything. I just forgive them for what they did to me. And I actually am giving myself the opportunity to be proud of the fact that I gave them actually opportunity several times for to fix, if it's possible, the relationship I was having with these people. And you give people, some people give one chance, some people give two chances. In my case, I gave them a lot of chances, but it doesn't work. It doesn't work because people change when they're able to see an issue with the way they treat somebody and the way they, you know, act. And when you don't see any issue with the way your treatment is, then you're not going to be able to change, right? You just have to acknowledge that you're doing something wrong. I guess they didn't think that they were doing something wrong. And I decided to kind of distance myself. It was the same thing with a lot of people in my life, I can tell you that. And it helps a lot. It helps a lot. And as I already said, you have the power over your feelings, over what you're doing, what your actions are, but you don't have any power over other people's actions, feelings, or anything else. You cannot make anybody do something, again, if they don't see an issue with their actions or anything. So it's really simple, and you just have to train yourself like this, and it's going to take time. I can tell you that it's not overnight.
You know, one thing that you just said is something that everybody says is so simple. And when you say that, it's so simple, and yet it's so difficult. And it takes a lot of determination and understanding of yourself. How did you get to that determination of yourself?
My determination of myself, very easy, very easy. I started to read some things online, and it's a nice thing to educate yourself. And if you have questions, you can always go online and read it. And this helps a lot. This helps a lot because when you're in this situation, you are always thinking that you're the reason, you are the victim, everything, you are the enabler, like every domestic violence and abusive relationship and stuff like this. But at the end, this is not the case. We as a woman usually tell, oh, I did something wrong. I should change. I have to do something. I have to make people love me. I'm doing something wrong. I have to change this. I have to change. No. People love you unconditionally, and they should love you the way you are, right? You don't have to do anything.
Right. And there's a lot of people out there that don't feel that way. And I would love to understand how you got to determine that. That's a huge thing for a lot of our listeners, I'm sure. How did you come to determine that, or were you just born with that? I'm not quite sure.
You know, how else you can look at things? Tell me, how else you can look at things? You just, again, say, hey, this is me, this is who I am, I'm honoring myself, I'm not doing anything wrong. Just people who supposed to love me, they shouldn't have any issues with, for example, the things I do or the things I say or anything else. And in my case, basically, my father wants me to be a certain way. My ex-husband wanted me to be a certain way. My daughter also wanted me to be a certain way. But you cannot live based on other people's expectations about who you are, right? Because the moment you change something about yourself, you become unhappy, right? And it's part of loving yourself, yeah. And if they don't accept me because of who I am, what is the reason for me to be in their life and we can constantly speak different languages. That's how I tell it. I speak English, they speak French. And it's the way it is, right?
Yeah, makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So I decided I want to be happy. I love myself. And I'm going to do the things that make me. And I don't need them in my life. And I don't need this pain. And I don't need to play small so other people can like me or my family can like me, right? And start doing the things that make me. This is who I am, right?
Yes, that's a beautiful thing. And thank you so much for answering my question. I will let the other panelists come on. But thank you so much. That was a beautiful statement. Over and under. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. Happy, very happy to help.
Thank you, Deborah. Great question. But I wanted to address something Deborah had said, and we'll get to talk to Deborah again when we get back through. But I've written a book and a workbook that goes with it. In my workbook, I talk about what happens, what do you have to do, to get to mental wholeness. You have to work at it. And like she said, Deborah said, it's a process. And so to reach full mental health as an adult survivor, it's not going to be easy, but it is simple. In other words, what I'm saying is the process is simple, but it's not easy. The simple process means we have to first stay in reality. And what happens is so much we try to escape the reality of what we survived, right? That's called grieving, too, by the way. And I truly believe, as a studying to be a social worker, one of the theories I came across was the grief stages of death and dying. I correlated my grief stages to the loss of my sexual innocence instead of death. And what I found out I was doing was I was denying, I was going through anger, bargaining, and all the different stages, depression. And so when I started looking at going through the grieving process of what I lost in my childhood, I started realizing by doing that and not escaping through drugs and alcohol like I once did, and, drama, different things that distract you from thinking about it and dealing with it, as I began to grieve, I began to be able to face it and stay in reality. And I'm not saying that I stayed in reality all the time. I mean, there were times that I just truly had to escape, for a little while, but then you get back to facing reality. Just, baby steps, one step at a time, deal with it. Deal with it head on. Deal with it with whatever emotions you're going through. Just if you have to just sit on the floor and cry and beat your fist and scream, whatever you got to do, feel those emotions. Get that pain out. Don't try to drink something and say, I'm going to numb this, because the more you numb it, the more you run from it, the worse it's going to be. It's not going to be easier. It's going to be harder. So I found through studying and working, I was sexually abused from the age of 4 to 18 by my mother's second husband. I found that at my 50s, she actually sent me out to him. So, that was a hard, hard thing to have to come to terms with. But I finally have my mental wholeness and mental health and have full closure, so I can say it can absolutely be done. So, Diane, I want to go down to Mary Ellen to New York and let her make a comment on what we were talking about before, about letting people go. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's really important that you let go of those that are hurting you. Instead of, it's like walking into a wall. If you keep trying and trying to make a relationship that is not going to happen, not to your expectations, and that's kind of what it is. Let go of those expectations of what you think it should have been, and look for healing within. And I love what you were just saying about the grief process, because I've always felt like it's definitely a grief process that you go through trying to heal from trauma. It's just like losing someone. It's like the process of letting go of someone who has died, because a piece of you has died. It's like you have to find that healing in order to come to a new level and enjoy your life. But I definitely think the grieving process is such a good terminology for it, because you cycle through different phases over and over, and you're never really in the same spot. You go further, but you still repeat it until healing takes place. And I think that process is all. Yeah. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Hey, you're welcome. That's how it works. You have to love yourself,
number one.
Yeah. You have to love yourself, honor yourself, and your happiness is number one, and it's not selfishness. And if the people who really, really love you, they will love you because of who you are, not because of who you want you to be and how they want you to spend the rest of your life as well. And there is somebody for everybody who's going to love you the way you are. And there is no point to stay in a situation like this. Yeah, it takes time. It's painful. It's very painful. But eventually you get on the other side. But you need to do the work. You need to do the work. You shouldn't stay and continue to be on the hamster wheel. You need to come to terms with yourself. And you need to say, hey, I want to live. I want to be happy. And I want to experience everything what this life has to offer to me. And I have the right to be who I am. And nobody should interfere with it. Even if I have to spend the rest of my life, by myself, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fine. Yeah. So I know, Bob, but I'm telling you, it's the best feeling in the world. You start to enjoy your company. You're happy. You're absolutely, absolutely feeling free. You don't have to think about what people are going to say if you do something if you say something, and you don't have to explain yourself constantly. Because if you have to explain yourself to people, it means that you might be in the wrong crowd or with the wrong person.
Right. Mary Ellen, did you have another comment or question before I meet your mind?
Nope. I think that was very well said, what she was just saying, and I'm fine. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Mary Ellen. I wanted to say, Diana, also to what you were saying, to piggyback on that is, you know, so many people that we let in our life that are toxic. And, of course, your dad, you didn't let him in your life. You know, he just happened to be, you know, you just happened to be put in his life because he was your dad. But so many times in a relationship when we're older, the people that we get into have issues like we did, and they want us to fix them. And we cannot fix each other, right? So if somebody's really flawed and having issues, they need professional help. Just like your dad, did you ever figure out whether he had any mental illness going on? It sounds like he, you know, may have been a real narcissist. I mean, because of the manipulation, because of the, you know, the abuse, the mental abuse, the verbal abuse. I mean, he just was so totally abusive. Did he have any mental illness in his family?
No, he's just narcissist.
Okay.
That's it. That's who he is. And there is nothing you can do about his illness. I don't know how much do you know about that, but there is no cure for it.
Right, right, right. Okay, let's see here. We left off, and I wanted to ask you, have you ever had any trauma therapy done? Did you ever go to therapy?
No, I never, you know, got in therapy. Usually in the country I'm coming from, people don't go to therapy very often. So I did it myself. I did it myself, and I am feeling so strong. And every time right now when there is an obstacle, especially right now, you know how difficult is the time we live in. Every time I go over an obstacle, I feel stronger and stronger. I feel confident. And basically from one side, if you look at different sides of what happened to me, this helped me so I'd be able to cope with everything what's going on around me. And I am very, I believe in myself. I have faith in myself. At the same time, I help a lot of people. And this makes me even more confident, and it's giving me more power. So
right.
I feel, yeah, so I never thought about therapy or anything like this.
So it says here in your bio that you started to help victims, and with your first book, Fire and Ice, that's the name of your book, and you become an activist. And it said that when you wrote your book, that was pretty much therapy for you. I know a lot of survivors write books, and, you know, once you get that poison out on paper, sometimes it just, you know, it's able to leave you. I mean, even journaling and just, you know, if you're just so pained, just sit down and write, you know, just put your feelings on paper, you know, so that you can address them and not escape them. You know, you need to understand what you're feeling so that you can deal with it, you know, and not
exactly.
run from it. Because the more you run from it, yeah. Yeah.
Yes,
so tell us
Fire
about
and
your
Ice
book.
Helped me a lot. Yeah, it helped me a lot because usually children like us, they when they're coming from family, when you're not loved from the male side, usually get into the same situation and meet the same person as your father. And going through my abusive relationship, basically, I was using journaling, and I definitely recommend to everybody, to all the victims of domestic violence and abuse, I'm always telling you, write down everything so you can acknowledge all of you, the things you're going through, and it helps you in your process of coping and understanding yourself better. So Fire and Ice definitely helped me a lot during the process of writing my book. And it was, of course, part of my healing process. And it helped me acknowledge the feelings, the pain, everything, all the feelings I was going through. And I went through everything alone. I had no support. My mom was far away. And it just, you know, I went within myself, and I was just telling myself, basically having conversation with myself and telling, you're going to be fine, you can do this, you are going to be able to cope with it, and you are going to find a way out, as I already did. And it's just amazing. And I feel right now good for myself, like everybody else. I'm having my ups and downs in my life, but most of the time I'm preoccupied with helping others. And as a matter of fact, there was a lady, she just called me before the radio show, and she was just telling me about her life, and I had to stop talking to her because I was going to be late. So this helped me definitely with my healing. I don't feel pain anymore. I don't miss the people who I left behind. And I don't know if I mentioned on the show, I have a sister from my stepmother, and we haven't seen each other also for quite a while because the last time when I called and looked for my father, she said that her father is at home and she doesn't know where is my father. So I think this was definitely made things very clear how our relationship is going to continue from this point on. And I just read, you know, between the lines, and I don't want to, you know, be in the life of somebody who doesn't respect me or and have any feelings towards me.
Right. I see here in your bio, you say, do not settle for anything less than love and respect. Always remember that you have the power to rebuild yourself, to live the life meant to be yours, and create everything that you have always dreamed of, no matter what. And, you know, I just see that you said motivation is the key, as well as education, to save lives and make everyone stronger. So you being here tonight and just hearing you talk has made me feel stronger. And, all of us, you know, have the trauma experience, and we have the feelings that we all went through, the fear, the pain, the suffering, the terror, the fight, freeze, all the damage done to our brains and our nervous systems because we were children as we were developing when this happened. So, you know, we have to be there for each other because we have made it on the other side, and we are a virtual family here at NASCA of survivors who, you know, don't want any more pain and will not accept any more pain. We're beyond pain. We just won't. So we've got less than 15 minutes. I want to go down the panel one more time. And if everybody would just keep their comment or their question short, I would really appreciate it, because we'll go over time and then the show will end in the middle of everything. So I'm going to go to Penelope. Can you say goodnight to Diana?
Absolutely. Can you hear me okay? Because I know my phone's been having problems.
Yes.
You're
home.
Well, I just want to say, and I know this has been expressed by Pamela and our other panel members, Deborah and Mary Ellen and Tanisha, but you're just very inspiring and very strong. Especially with your attitude and your resolve to heal and to, you know, move forward and to really separate yourself from the abuse of your father. So I want to echo all those sentiments. And I did want to say, back to forgiveness, and I know that subject has come up tonight. I wanted to give my little two cents on forgiveness, because I believe that part of forgiveness is actually going through the healing process and speaking your truth. Because to me, in order to forgive, I have to make sure that what I'm forgiving, that I'm going to break the cycle so it doesn't happen again. And that's what you've done. Because when you speak the truth and you go through the healing process, and you address the pattern, you change it, to me it's all part of forgiveness. It's just really walking down that road of what you're, you know, taking that wrong that you're forgiving and going in a completely different direction, if that makes sense. So that is how I, you know, part of my definition of forgiveness, and I just see that you're doing that tonight. So I want to thank you. And
you're
I will
welcome.
Stifle myself now.
Thank you so much, Dana. What it definitely means a lot to me. Always remember how much you love yourself and how important it is to honor yourself. And you're not going to settle for anything less than that when it comes to everybody around you.
Absolutely.
Tanisha, you're on with Diana.
Hello.
Tanisha. Hello. I can hear
Tanisha? You. Yes. Like you were just telling her about journaling and everything. That's good to do. Journaling helped me, and it helped me to become the author that I am today. And just keep doing it and allow God to allow you to journal. And just put all your pain, your story, and your testimony into a book. And once again, I'm here to support you in any way I can. And thank you.
You're welcome, Tanisha. Thank you for being part of this show.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Tanisha. We're going to Mary Ellen in New York, and then we'll go to Deborah. Mary Ellen? Mary Ellen?
Yes. I don't want to hold up the line, but I appreciate you sharing your story tonight. There's been so many wonderful comments. Thank you all. You're just so brave and such great hearts. And I hope that people listening to tonight's show can gain the strength they need to trust themselves and move forward in their healing process. Thank you.
Awesome.
You're welcome. Well, you're welcome, Marianne. Thank you so much. It was very nice to talk to you.
Deborah, you're on with Diana.
Yeah. Diana, thank you so much. I'm going to keep this short, and I'm just trying to summarize this up really quickly. I love what you said about forgiving your father and forgiving, and that has come up a lot tonight. I'm also going to say that it's amazing that you're so resilient on how you've achieved your accomplishments, and I'm very proud of you. I'm so thankful you're a part of the NASCA community, and I'm going to keep it short and make sure the show doesn't go. Thank you so much.
Hey, you're welcome, Deborah. Take care for yourself. Love yourself. Do the things that makes you.
Okay. So we're down to just a little under 10 minutes. So what would you leave our audience with, Diana, before we go? What would you want to share with our audience?
I just want everybody to understand that they need to love themselves. They need to do, the things that makes them. They shouldn't tolerate any disrespect, because there is only one life, and only one life for everybody, again. And holding a grudge towards somebody, like everybody knows, is like drinking a poison from a cup, and if nothing good comes from it, you get stuck. And the only way to deal with it, it's imperative to let it go, to use understanding, and to always say, hey, it's not because of me, it's because of them, and I don't have any power over other people. So for me, the best thing to do is just try to let them go, send them love, and continue my life. Very important. And I hope this is going to help somebody. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome, Diana. Thank you for sharing your insight and your story and your way of healing. Because I know a lot of our listeners are asking the same questions that our panel did tonight, to find out, you know, some of the answers and things that we need to do to heal. So I want to thank Penelope, my co-host, and the panelists that we have tonight. Diana, before we go, just tell us if anybody wants to reach out to you or to get your book.
Yeah, my books are available on Amazon. You just type Diana Bellaros in the search engine, as well as you can go on my website, dianabellaros.com, and find out about me, the things I have been doing. And this is a good way if you want to reach to me. And if you have any questions, you can find me all over the media places. I'm on Twitter, Diana Bellaros. I'm on Instagram, Diana Bellaros. I post a lot of videos, helpful videos. I do a lot of things to help people. I do some meditation also on my Facebook account. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach to me. I'll be more than happy to do everything in my power to make sure that all the questions you have, all the pain you're going through, I'm able to do something about it. And I definitely suggest journaling again, and for distract yourself every time you catch yourself, you're thinking about what had happened to you in your life. Do something that makes you do some fitness, do painting, do anything that that takes your mind away from the things that start to pile up in your head. Take a walk on the beach, take a walk in the park, and it's a really great way to cope. And that's how I started when I moved here in Los Angeles. most of the time I spent it with my dogs at Malibu on the beach. And it helps a lot, just looking at the sea, looking at the nature of the birds. You have no idea how this process is healing and how much you'll be able to learn to understand yourself better, to listen to your inner voice. At the same time, you're going to start to enjoy your company a lot, and it's going to make you stronger. So this is the last word I want to share with you.
And you are a very strong young woman, and we're proud of you here at NASCA. And now you're a NASCA member. You can call in to the panel when we have special guests on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you can be part of the panel and you know, support questions and comments when we go down through the panel. And I wanted to let you know that, you know, we're here to support you any way we can, you know, as well, and to support our listeners if they want to call in. We have a little bit of time. Just quickly, who is your support group now? Who do you surround? Who is around you that you feel like you're safe with and support you in what you're doing?
I have a lot of women victims of domestic violence. I have a group on Facebook, and we do a lot of things together. We try to do some fun things. Right now we are doing this warrior pageant where we're going to bring a lot of women going who had been through a traumatic experience, and we're going to give them the opportunity to show their talents, whatever they're doing. They can read a poem, they can dance, they can sing, whatever they want to do. We're trying to make fun things for everybody so they don't feel like they're alone. And these are the people I'm surrounded to because I work on this, and I was able to create a lot of friends, and we check in with each other, we're talking about what we are going to do next, what kind of events we're going to create. Of course, authors, I have written 6 books, and that's how it is. And of course, I have friends, I can call and talk to them, and it helps a lot. It helps a lot, and you're in the tribe of people. You have something in common, which is really, really pivotal. So that's how
I'm
dealing.
Wow, I'd like to be part of that.
Yes. Absolutely.
I'd like to be part of that. Penelope. Doesn't that sound great, Penelope? Penelope?
Yes, I'm sorry. I was on mute.
Oh, okay. Didn't that sound great, what she's doing?
It sounded absolutely fantastic. If we live nearby, well, I can go on your page, but I do the meditation and the hikes, beach walks as well, so I'll be doing them with you in my thoughts. But yes, it sounds awesome. And it's a reminder, slipping away from doing so much, and it's a reminder to come back to that too.
Right. Well,
yeah.
Diana, I'm going to... Okay, thank you, Penelope. I'm going to be reaching out to find out what you're doing. Is it all virtual?
Yeah, everything is virtual. There are going to be prizes. There are going to be crowns for the winners and everything. So it's a great way, you know, to get together and have some fun and kind of reward each other, right, for everything what we have been going through, and share all our talents.
Yes.
And give opportunity to other women who are vendors to get their products exposed in the media places.
Oh.
It is, yeah, which is absolutely amazing. So just let me know, and I'm going to send you a link, and I would love to have a link to the radio show today so I can post it. And thank you so much for the invitation. I would definitely try my best to be Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I believe, on the show. And
okay.
Yeah, be part of the show and answer any questions.
I have to end the show.
so I'm going to say goodnight from Nesca. Thank you, Diana.
You're welcome. Good night, everybody. It was very nice talking to you.
Thank you.
Love Talk Radio.